Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
WGN, a very happy Sunday evening. Hope you've enjoyed the nice weather. I was moving this weekend, and I gave a compliment to the movers. They did such a great job. Someone called in and wanted to know the moving company, because, you know, a lot of people are moving these days. Two Guys in a Van was the name of the company I did. I know there's another one called Two Men in a Truck. I'm sure that's well-reviewed. This was Two Guys in a Van. And there were actually three guys, so maybe that's why it went so well. They're like, hey, look, let's get an extra guy. Let's get three in this van, and let's do it. And they did a great job. I highly recommend it. Once I turned 32, I think that's the age when you stop asking your friends to help you move, right around there. So now that I'm over that, I couldn't do it. And my parents were very helpful, too. But a couple years ago, they did the whole move, the whole thing. My dad moving the big dresser and all that. And I'm so glad I didn't give him a heart attack when he was doing that. And I said, you know what? Never doing that again. Dad, you've earned it. You've earned your retirement from helping me move. But of course, they were there still helping us hang up photos and all that sort of stuff. Two Guys in a Van, too, I used. A shameless plug there to them. I will say the most stressful part of the moving wasn't only yesterday, the move, and I'm sure everyone who's done it experiences it gets this. It was going to the new grocery store today to get groceries. I went to a new one in a new location. I had no idea where anything was, and it was Easter Sunday, so it was packed, everyone getting their last minute things or whatever. It was chaotic. I almost had a panic attack because I couldn't find lentils. I almost broke down in an aisle, just like I think I've searched everyone, and I think some kind woman, not anyone that worked at the store, could notice my pain. She's like, are you looking for something, honey? I'm like, the lentils. She's like, two aisles over. I know, it's hard. I told her it was my first time at the grocery store. She's like, don't worry, you'll get the hang of it. I'm like, it's not the first time I've ever been at a grocery store, just this particular one. Because we know where they are when you go to the same one for years and years and years. Oh, okay, I'll stop. I'll get to our next guest here. He's been holding on patiently. John Holden, a historian, done some reporting in the past as well. He decided to spend Lent going to many different churches all across the Chicago area, a sort of pilgrimage of doomed churches. John, thanks for joining us here on this Easter Sunday.
Thank you very much for having me.
I got to ask, and it's a great story in the Tribune column that Mary wrote, and I love the photos of the old churches and just the stories behind them. What made you decide to want to go on this journey?
Well, I'm a lifelong Chicagoan, and I've lived both on the north side and south side through the course of my life, and I really love the city, and I'm a big architecture buff, and I've been involved in a lot of preservation battles over the years. I've been back a church-going Catholic again for the last 10-20 years, and I've been a bit of an itinerant churchgoer and mm-hmm. like to get around and see different churches, and thought I'd seen a fair number, maybe a couple dozen around the city, but with the news of the parish consolidations and so forth sweeping the city, I thought this might be the last time to really see a lot of these churches as they were intended to be used. So for Lent, I said I was going to go to a different church every week, and I did that, but I really feel like I've just scratched the surface, and it's something I'm hoping to continue as long as I can.
Gorgeous churches, of course, dot all over our city, both inside
amazing.
And out. And I think that sometimes we just take for granted that the church will always be there. I don't know if it's even if it's not the church you went to, right? In my neighborhood where I used to live in the Lakeview community, such gorgeous churches. But I got to say, John, over the years I've lived there, I don't know how many, 3, 4, 5 of these churches, some smaller, some a little bigger, converted to condos. And right. I am glad, I guess, that the exterior still is preserved and that it looks good, but it hurts a little bit.
I think most of those churches that have been converted to condos tended to be smaller Protestant churches,
yeah.
Not quite the grand Catholic cathedral-like structures we have in many, many neighborhoods around the city. So I don't know that they could be repurposed in that same way.
Yeah.
And while a lot of the developers have done very sensitive recreations of some of these old churches that are no longer being used as churches, I just can't imagine that you could really do anything with one of these big Catholic churches to in any way kind of honor the grandeur of what the space was. If you chop it, the interior up, you just lose the...
Yeah, you know, yeah, it's the whole purpose.
You lose the grandeur of what was on the inside. The exterior, obviously, is something that's quite valuable, especially for people who just go by the building and never go in. But it's just been a revelation. There are just so many beautiful churches, and I have yet to go into one where I felt underwhelmed. There was just so much beautiful artwork, and you know, the gold leaf in many of the churches and so forth. It just boggles the mind to wonder what it would cost to build something like that now. And you know,
never be
what
done.
Value do we put on these things before we, you know, basically dispose of them?
John, you mentioned what's inside the church. Not only, of course, the finishings, the feeling, the vibe, but the records, the things that will get moved on from place to place, including, it tickled me, the story of you being able to kind of find the record. It was your grandparents, right?
That's right. At Our Lady of Lourdes, they were married there in 1924. And actually, I've got a second cousin who's something of a deep historian on our family. And she had a picture from my grandparents' wedding. And she wanted me to find out, she asked me a few months ago to find out who my grandfather's best man was. So it's been on my to-do list to get over to Lourdes to see if I could get that information. And sure enough, just this past Friday, it took them all of about 3 minutes to find the information for me. So it's truly a sense of, you know, historic connection as well to the to a lot of these churches. That one in particular, Our Lady of Lourdes at Ashland and Leland, it was my parish church for a number of years, and it's just an absolutely beautiful facility, and I can't imagine that will ever cease being a church.
Yeah.
It's not engraved in stone yet that these churches will be closing, but, you know, the Archdiocese has been pretty transparent and showing what the finances have been. They're going through this entire process called Renew My Church, and they're essentially combining parishes, and then a single parish will then have two churches. And, you know, it makes you wonder how long can they kind of keep that pattern going. The upkeep on these buildings is obviously not insignificant.
No.
So,
and it's just the reality of it. It's a financial reality, which stems, of course, from a demographics reality, from a changing world we live in reality. I mean, a lot of these churches, I imagine, were just so perfect for when they were built and when they were full in the 20s or 30s or 40s, and even more recent than that. But, I mean, do we have any idea with some of these parishes or some of these churches, I should say, in the drop of attendance, even before COVID? I mean, some of these masses must be more sparse than a lot of people may seem to even realize.
I that is definitely true. And you can go on the internet and go to the Archdiocese website on Renew My Church, and they provide all the details, not only on attendance and enrollments, but also the finances. And many of these parishes have been operating at deficits for quite a long time, including, I was surprised to learn, my home parish, St. Gertrude's, which is in a relatively affluent corner of Edgewater, still running a bit of a deficit just in its own operations. So, unfortunately, there was just another report out this past week on the decline in church attendance, or all religious affiliation, really, down under 50% for the first time nationwide. So, one can hope that there's a bit of a renaissance in people's faith, but I'm sure the Archdiocese has to think about the reality of the situation as well.
Certainly. John, I know this was a personal journey for you. Any thoughts on how you might share what you've seen, not only just here on air or through a column, but I don't know if you took a ton of photos or is, you know, a blog. I don't know. Is there anything that you're going to do?
Halfway through the process, I did start taking photos of many of these churches and started posting them on Facebook, and actually got a lot of really wonderful anecdotes from friends and family, you know, finding out cousins who were married at certain churches and things like that. And yes, every church has obviously, thousands of personal stories that are attached to them. And it's really the community. It was the heart of the community for many of these neighborhoods for many, many decades. And for many people, it still remains that. So it's obviously a very painful process for parishioners when they see their local church is possibly not going to be around any longer. So it's a very difficult process and period for many people.
Boy, this is a dumb question, but I like to ask dumb questions, John. So if I, as I'm look through the photos, they're incredible, and you list a lot of the churches, or Mary does, that list of the churches where you went to, St. Sylvester's in Logan Square, St. Ignatius in Rogers Park, or Lady of Victory in Portage Park. Are these places that anyone can, pick a time, and as long as there's someone in the church, you can go in, walk through, and take a look? I mean, is there restrictions? I mean, are there hours posted somewhere? Like, how do you, or do you just wander in? You're always welcome.
Most, I've been going to masses. I've been attending religious services each week. Almost every church in the city has daily mass in the morning, so you can generally get in anytime they're open for services. They generally are locked up when they're not in use. So,
makes sense.
I would say Sunday mornings, Saturday afternoons and Sunday mornings would be your best times to get around and try to see some of these magnificent edifices. I've done a lot of traveling in Europe, and going to see the churches in Europe in the cathedrals has really been an awe-inspiring experience for me. And like you said earlier, you just take the stuff in your own backyard for granted, and it's been really a revelation for me to get in and see so many just absolutely stunningly beautiful churches.
I follow on a bunch of Facebook groups, whether it's Forgotten Chicago or old.
It's a great one.
Oh, it's great. And they're great. They're great communities to come together to write down memories. But as Mary quotes you in the piece, they're not quite the anchor as much as a church can be to actually gather and share.
That's correct. Yeah. Absolutely. It's just nice to go into a space with people who are more or less complete strangers, but you do feel a sense of connectedness with them through the experience of going through a mass with them and so forth. And I've tried to, even in this very cautious time of COVID and people are leery of talking to strangers and so forth, I still find that there are a lot of people who are just really open to meeting new people and, having a pleasant conversation. And sometimes it involves the building itself. And obviously when I've been in there taking pictures, a lot of people have come up to me and asked me, are you a new parishioner or things like that? And I said I could very easily come to this sanctuary every week if I had to. Yeah. So it's kind of a race. I feel like I'm in a race against time now.
Yeah.
I almost feel like I have to get to every last one in the city, and I quite honestly haven't even figured out exactly how many there are out there. I think there are at least 100 to 150 churches. A number have already closed and are no longer really open to the public. It's a little unclear. I think it's uncertain for the Archdiocese at this point as to what, if any, actual church buildings will be closing in the next year or two. They're consolidating the parishes and usually keeping two sanctuaries operating at the same time. But as the pastor over at Our Lady of Lourdes noted the other day when Mary and I were over there, it's probably just a matter of time before some of these grand buildings are going to be closed up.
Yeah. The column is at ChicagoTribune.com right now. John Holden, thanks for giving us some of your time here on this Sunday.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Happy Easter.
Yeah. Do the rest of the churches. Come back in 4 years, okay?
All right. Thank you much.
Yeah, take care.